whatever may be our particular background in life today, all of us realize and are conscious of the fact that the world and all of us in it are passing through a time of great crisis. We are living in a time of great stress and strain. As our president expressed it in his last presidential address a few days ago, a time of great urgency and pressure. All of us who are members of the Theosophical Society, perhaps more than others in the world at large, are concerned with this crisis from the standpoint of what it has to offer to the world, its meaning at the present time, what it has in store for us all, and whether we can use this particular crisis through which we are passing in order theosophically to bring about a certain change, a certain new idea, new era in the life of humanity. This particular crisis has often been described in the last few years, and particularly in the years following the last great war, as a time of great danger for humanity. But whilst most of us realize in a general sort of way the nature of this crisis, whilst most of us understand the dangers which it presents, the time of difficulty and struggle which it spells for all of us, very few of us have taken the trouble to analyze this crisis, to find out its direction, and from that finding to arrive at some kind of an illumination as to where it is intended to lead us. In the last century, just before the Theosophical Society was founded, the nature of this crisis began to be realized in what is called often the rising tide of materialism. The great adept, Master M, in meeting HPB in London and putting before her the founding of the Theosophical Society, described to her the nature of this crisis and asked her cooperation in bringing a movement into the world which shall tackle fundamentally the roots of this crisis and will bring a focus of energy, of thought, of idea, of action, of effort by a group of people who will work together to stem the spread of materialism in the world. What does materialism imply? And why is it that the great brotherhood of humanity, more than anyone else, becoming alarmed at its increase, have tried to bring about a stemming of its spread and rise? We have understood, all of us to some extent, that materialism spells a loss of certain fundamental values in life. And it is upon the fundamental values of life that ultimately the progress and welfare of humanity at large is centered. We have all the time to realize this fact, not in a vague sort of way, but deepen upon the idea, putting it into our thinking in terms of the modern world and the events which are taking place in it. In terms of the position of man today, his thinking, his wants, his desires, his aspirations, his efforts, whither are they directed? What is the motive behind them? What is man seeking? Is he seeking something which is fundamental to his happiness and welfare, or is he not? This is the way in which I feel we, as members of the Theosophical Society, have to examine this problem. Today, you will find in the world that not only theosophists, but leaders of the world community at large have to some extent come to the realization of this problem of human happiness. Not anymore from an individualistic point of view with which we began our evolution. I'm concerned with my happiness, my comfort, my welfare, my well-being, and later on from that, the well-being of my family, my group, my community, and so on. But with the entrance of humanity upon an era of nationalism, the welfare and the progress and well-being of the nation as a whole. And arising out of this idea, we see the great ideas of a welfare state which have become a reality, an actuality in practice in many of the great countries of the world. We need not dwell upon this idea, but only to realize that this development is comparatively a very, very modern and new one in the history of mankind. The great country of England, for example, with its unbroken history of many, many centuries of progress and development, brought about the idea of a welfare state in its statute only in the Act of 1948. And so you will realize that it is comparatively very recently that the idea of a welfare state has been realized by the governments of the world at large. Arising out of our experiences of the two great world wars in this century, it was increasingly realized that nationalism was not enough, that the world must come together, the nations of the world must come together in mutual cooperation, in mutual understanding, in mutual help to each other, if war has to disappear from the lives of human beings. And arising out of that, two great efforts in international cooperation have already been an experience in our lives, the one beginning with the League of Nations. And as a result of the mistakes, of the lacks contained in that organization, a much healthier and a much bigger movement in the terms of the United Nations. We will not dwell upon the work and achievements of this great organization, except as theosophists to realize its importance, a great work which is being done at certain fields, at certain levels of human life, in order to bring the welfare and the progress of humanity within the access of all human beings. But from this point, we have to still ask ourselves, is it enough? Is the United Nations or any other international organization achieving the type of brotherhood, the type of world cooperation and union that we are intended to achieve in what is given to us in the first object of the Theosophical Society, to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, and color. When we look upon the human problem from this point of view, we realize that a great deal more is needed if we have to help what we have already said, the fundamental problems of the world. And it is from this point of view that the Theosophical Society and its members can make a unique approach and give a unique direction towards the understanding and the solution of the world crisis. We have to, as it were, not be an extension of what is being achieved by the international efforts in the world, but in a way we have to retrace our steps and our thinking and to give a new direction and a new starting point in this problem, as has been indicated in the first object of the Theosophical Society. We have all realized, and at some time or the other understood the fact, that the society was not merely an action of two very highly minded individuals, Madame Blavatsky and Colonel Olcott, who as founders gave to us this worldwide organization. We know that behind the organization stand two whom we know as the inner founders of the Theosophical Society. And when they gave the society to us, they wanted to ensure against the limitations of a purely mental interpretation of all the great ancient teachings of the wisdom contained in the great religions and the philosophies of the world. And I would like to present to you today the full implication of this first object and how ultimately it can be applied by us in the facing of the crisis of man. This first object of ours is one which is called the binding object upon all members of the Theosophical Society. And the founders themselves, both inner and outer, gave to this object the fundamental value that we have in our work. How fundamental it was thought of can be understood from this statement of one of the inner founders when he said, this consent, that is the consent in the formation of the Theosophical Society, this consent of our highest chief, you will please bear in mind, was obtained solely under the express and unalterable condition that the new society should be founded as a branch of the Universal Brotherhood. In their minds, it was, in a way, a branch, a nucleus of that Universal Brotherhood, which was a completely realized thought and object in their own brotherhood. It is apparent, therefore, that the primary aim of the Theosophical Society is not so much in the dissemination of a doctrine, although that is a very great function of the Theosophical Society, but over and above the giving out of the teachings, the spreading of the doctrine among the world at large, the responsibility given to us is to become a true brotherhood, to become a true brotherhood, and to assist all who are willing to make the attempt to realize that brotherhood. That is the great implication of the first object of the Theosophical Society. Now, generally, we have an idea. When we come into the Theosophical Society and become conscious of this first object, that brotherhood is a simple and self-explanatory doctrine or principle in life. And we often try to understand this object in terms of friendship, of goodwill, of peace, of tolerance, of being brotherly to each other, and so on. Doubtless, this is the first presentation that the idea of brotherhood offers itself to us. And it must be admitted that even in the achievement of this first idea of brotherhood in group work, in our society, in other groups in which we live, in our families, and so on, we cannot say that we have succeeded with a great degree of success in expressing our brotherhood. Nevertheless, in our minds, in our thinking, we have always to go deeper and deeper into this idea, realizing the fact that this object and this idea of brotherhood was given to us by no less than the great masters of the wisdom, and that they had in their own minds and thinking something which was much deeper, something which was much more fundamental in realization than we are apt to do in our own lives. What does brotherhood really mean? In the past, when we trace the history of mankind, we see its development in the early stages from the emotional point of view. Man in relation to his tribe. The blood brotherhood, as it was recognized in the early days of human infancy. At a later stage, we come to what is called the mental aspects of the idea of brotherhood, when it was expressed by the links of individuals with other individuals of similar ideological standpoints. It was a mental link, uniting those who thought together or who thought similarly upon different ideas into a link, a group, a coming together. But you will realize that this mental link also had its great dangers and also has its great dangers, in the sense that just as we come together, people of similar ideas, so also we come against those who have dissimilar ideas and dissimilar ideologies from our own. So that from one standpoint, when we come together mentally, from the other standpoint, we look upon with suspicion, we look upon with prejudice against those whose ideas are different from our own. Now, is it possible for us to go beyond the emotional and the mental implications of brotherhood and come to something which is deeper? From this deeper point of view, we realize that it is the realization of the inner unity that binds all mankind and all creation. The realization that the self of man and the self of the universe is one and indivisible. We often speak of the unity of life as the basic teaching of theosophy. But do we realize that it is only this one principle of the unity of all creation, of all universe, that is the true essence of mysticism, that is the true essence of occultism of which we speak? You will find, as you study the various movements and philosophies of the world, that at some time or the other, in the process of mysticism, you find a direct approach from man to God. This is symbolized in the beautiful teachings of Sufism, Islamic mysticism, wherein the man, forgetting all the diversities, all the complexities, all the different details of the manifestation of the universe, finds himself in direct communion with God and has the highest inspiration to merge into that realization. The mere accumulation of details do not add to the wholeness which is the real world. Through our mental processes, through the process of analysis, of deletion, of discrimination, we see the world in all its details, in all its diversities, in all its complexities. And yet, there has to be, in the realization of true brotherhood, a gathering together of all these different details, of all these variations, of all these diversions which we see in the world, into the realization of one complete unity. With the use of the higher mind, there is a sense of unity which we achieve in abstraction. The sense of unity, for example, which is felt by the scientist as he discovers a great universal principle or a great universal law in nature. But it is with the dawning of the Buddhic consciousness, it is with the dawning of the perceptive ability of man, it is with the flowering out of the human intuition that one can say ultimately that we realize the sense of brotherhood in all its entirety. That our oneness with one another and the universe is not known, not only by emotional affinity, by logical deductions and conclusions, or revealed by law, but as an absolute and empirical experience in the lives of each one of us. In our theosophical teaching, we are given the idea of the evolution of races. And we realize in that study that man evolves from stage to stage, and from each stage through the various races, a certain keynote is expressed. We have gone through the emotional stage in the earlier races of mankind. At the present stage, we know that the fifth great root race of mankind is intended to achieve the highest development of the mind. But we are building towards the beginnings of the sixth root race, when we know that the expression of the race will be an expression of the buddhi, the intuition, the inward perception of man in the understanding and the knowledge of all the problems that arise around him. How shall we prepare for that realization? We have been told recently by many of our great workers that we have to come to a stage at the present type of our development when we exercise what is called the buddhi manas, the mind which cannot be escaped at the present stage of our evolution, but the mind somehow rooted, inspired, guided, given impetus to by the quality of intuition, by the quality of an inward perception that will give us the consciousness which is needed towards the building of the new race into the future. We, as members of the Theosophical Society, can become the forerunners, the pioneers of that new race, but we have to seek the consciousness by which this fundamental object of the society can be expressed from the standpoint of the buddhi manas. I would like to quote to you here a very fine statement by Mrs. Doris Groves, the past General Secretary of the English section. She says, "All the great teachings of the ancient wisdom hide within a mental framework a reality, a truth, which is gradually perceived as we are able to enter into the inner consciousness of buddhi. Perhaps this is the great revelation of the Theosophical teachings, that the world is not only a world of facts as cognized by the senses of the mind, but there is another approach to reality beyond the mind, a consciousness that fuses the highest aspects of the mind and of the heart into a radiance of understanding. It is through the buddhic consciousness that the divine is first glimpsed, and the corollary of this inner realization is the supreme fact of brotherhood." So, friends, we have to try and realize the deeper implications of this fact of brotherhood from as deep, from as real, from as fundamental a aspect of consciousness as we possibly can. And it is in this way that we express the uniqueness, that we express the new light that theosophy would bring to the solution of the world problems. It is only when we are able to do this that we are able to understand how we, as workers in the world, can bring to the people at large a new standpoint into the solution of their problems.